From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 310 with guest Jeff Stokes, recorded Wednesday, March 20th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm bringing back an old standby. Jeff Stokes is back with us. He's a PFE. And, well, Jeff, introduce yourself. You've done this enough times now. I don't need to introduce you anymore.
I'm Jeff Stokes. I'm a field engineer for Microsoft. I've been doing it about 4 years. Been at Microsoft for a little over five now, and do a lot of client and server deployment and performance analysis, things like that. I've been in IT about 19 years. It's been a fun ride so far.
What drew you to PFE while we're just jumping immediately off the topic?
Sure. PFE, I was looking at when I was in the phone queues, I got to help customers, but it was, a constant grind of address an issue, and you never really got to deal with the holistic side of operational health or, really know what happened after you fixed the problem. And that was one of kind of my frustrations in working in that environment, is that I wanted more impact, on a daily basis. I mean, I fixed crit sets, don't get me wrong,
but, sure.
I wanted to be more involved, and PFE was really the way to, kind of do that at Microsoft. I was transactional for a good 3 years, and there were some weeks I was in, two or three, four states a week, helping customers out, and I learned a lot. It was just great exposure.
And there is some of your time spent doing preventative now with PFE, doing more assessment and actually, dealing with stuff before it's a panic.
Right. Yeah. It used to be, way back in the day, PFE was all about, preventative maintenance, mm-hmm. or rather reactive. It's really morphed into preventative maintenance and, teaching classes, doing assessments, teaching workshops, and really helping people become better engineers. So, like, I teach a performance workshop that, I go on site and I teach them how to use PerfMon, how to use XPerf, how to troubleshoot, what does this really mean? It's not really Windows internals. It's a little too advanced, but really more of layman's terms. How do you deal with a system that has given you problems,
And it feels like we're getting, there used to always be this suite of individual downloads you could grab where XPerf came from and MDT came from and so forth. They were all free, but people just didn't know about them. So I felt like you guys were kind of magical. You'd show up and say, well, there's this tool and this tool and this tool and this tool, and here's the things it'll take care of for you.
Hey, that's a good assessment. And you can even say that that's true to some extent today still with a lot of the even sysinternals you can download as a package now, and you can access it through SkyDrive, right? The ADK kind of gluing together some of the deployment pieces and troubleshooting and activation, ACT and things like that.
So what's the ADK?
So the Windows ADK is I always get the acronym for it wrong, but it is the Windows. I think it's the Assessment and Deployment Kit. Yeah, that's okay. Correct. Assessment and Deployment Kit.
And so this actually pulls together a bunch of tools. I think we've talked at some of them before, but it's nice to see them all in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're totally in acronym soup today, because when you talk about the Windows Assessment Toolkit, which is WAT, there's also the Windows Activation Technology uses the same acronym. Watch out for that. And then if you just look for Windows Assessment Toolkit, you'll also find MAP, which is the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit.
Right.
It looks like most of these different pieces have been pulled in to one place. So the ADK is actually centralizing all this stuff.
Yeah, it was a good move. It comes down as a web installer, so you pick what you want. Mm-hmm. And you can also, when you do the web installer, you have an option to kind of download everything for later use on your network, so you're not stuck hitting the web every time you want to add or remove a component or put it on a new machine. Yeah.
That's good. So favorite bits, where do we get, what do you usually grab this suite for?
The Windows Performance Toolkit is kind of the bread and butter of what I do. And then you need some of the parts of the ADK for MDT as well. The Deployment Toolkit, USMT, and you know, the, it comes with WinPE, also WinPE 4 is in there. So,
and for those who don't know what PE is?
It's our pre-installation environment, right?
Right.
So, yeah, basically our little Windows Lite almost. That you can use for doing deployments. So MDT makes great use of it, where we can do WMI calls, you know, and get assess what we're running on before we lay down our image of Windows. Like one of the cool tricks is, you know, if model equals X or if his laptop equals true, then install this particular suite of software like the Bluetooth driver stack.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is really how I do zero touch, or you know, almost completely minimal touch on multiple machines. As new hardware comes in, they just know what images to pick up.
Yeah, yeah. And the important thing is that this is free. There is no SAEA requirements. It's just a free download. The
right.
ADK is just there. Yeah.
And so this is an actually a new way to package MDT. And I have had a chance to talk to a few folks now that have gotten serious about the deployment toolkit. And just life is better when you get your deployment images right. And you can re-image machines quickly. You're doing your patching through the images and then pushing them down onto machines. It's a pretty awesome state to be in if you can get it all together.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Totally recommend the enterprise or even smaller enterprise, you know, small medium businesses spend the time to make a universal image, and you know, from a support standpoint and deployment and you know rapid deployment, are you giving someone a new machine? It shouldn't take hours, you
right.
know. Yeah.
And it's not ghost, right? This is not just making a copy of a machine and the machine has that you put it onto has to be identical. It's a heck of a lot smarter than that.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The fact that you can have an image and then put it on different hardware because it knows how to change out the drivers, that to me seems kind of magical that it pulls that off, but it definitely works.
Yeah, the cool thing is, and yeah, we're totally off topic, but the you look at, like, when MDT, you know, the real way that you're supposed to do it, right, is you mm-hmm. create a driver profile where you say, if the model is this, then I want these drivers to be available. But for a smaller engagement where they only have two or three hardware models and you don't have any driver conflicts, you can just stuff them all into a directory and MDT will just pull the ones it needs.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about it having the extra drivers that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
It's kind of, yeah, it's very clever. Now, the assessment part, what do we mean when we say assessment? What are we trying to do?
Well, yeah, good question. There's actually, in the ADK, there are two different assessment engines, and there's one that requires like server infrastructure and, you know, some thought into how you're going to put it in your environment.
Yeah.
And there's another, and that's called Windows Assessment Services. And then there's a lightweight one that is called the Windows Assessment Toolkit, where it actually will run XPerf-based traces on your machine and then just spit out reports based on what its findings are.
So is it primarily assessing performance?
That's right, and some reliability. Like one of the jobs is to run driver verifier and make sure you're not running any drivers. They're going to blue screen for your end users, things like that.
How would you know that that driver might blue screen?
Well, it actually will go through and do you know, regular function calls to the drivers and say, you know, like allocate memory,
right,
or do this. You know, it goes through and basically pokes and prods at the drivers based on their class.
Nice.
And yeah, if you have a memory leak, it'll detect the memory leak. Driver verifier is built into the OS, so basically it's running scripted verifier commands against the machines you're assessing.
And this is all remote collection, so you know, back at Grand Central in my office, I'm able to go and reach out to each of these machines and inspect their drivers using the assessment toolkit.
Well, with the Windows Assessment Server, you could,
oh, okay.
Although it's not supposed to be running domain, but Windows Assessment Toolkit, the cool thing with this is that you can build your assessment into a package and then just send it to an end user for them to double click and run,
okay.
And it'll do the job for you. And then you just get the results back in a bundled cab file. And there you go. There's the assessment. You open it up in your console. It tells you what it thinks is wrong. And then the raw ETW trace data is there to drill into.
Interesting. So this is small enough to email around.
Yep. Yep. Or put on a file share or what have you.
Put on a file share, say, here, you know, click on this, run it, and send me back the cab.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, the challenge talking with PFE folks is you're typically working with big enterprises, but this sounds like a small business tool that anybody could use this for any number of machines and have it make sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is basically like the accessible version. I like to think of it for small, medium business types that they don't want to spin up a VM and a separate network and, you know, pound on their build on multiple model numbers of machines or virtualized or whatever and compare the results in a server and do long-term trending and all this heavy infrastructure where you need a server with hundreds of gigs of space and all that. This is just something you can run on the client and just get some quick results. And, you know, we look at using this, is the discrete video card worth purchasing, you know, for IE10? It's a good question.
Wow, that's an interesting question to try and answer. Because I was just about to ask, like, is this just about checking out drivers?
No. Yeah, so the tests are pretty rich. It'll actually run, if you remember the Take Your Mind Back to the Beauty of the Web.
Yeah.
You know, where it had like some of the, like the goldfish test and the snowflake test and sure. all that. So it's going to run those test cases on the machine and determine, well, how many snowflakes could I render through my job? How
right.
many frames per second could I display? And it's going to go through and take all these and it's going to write them up into a report for you.
So, and it's actually assessing, am I CPU bound or am I GPU bound?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So you get in exactly that discussion. I mean, I've been in that role where my users come to me and saying, oh, you know, if I had this video card, everything'd be fine.
Yeah, that's sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong.
Right.
You know, it's like one of the things that always gets me, and I love the fact that we break it out in the resource monitor, the memory, you know, because it always used to be something where you fight with the end user over, my machine needs more RAM.
Right.
You know, and the resource monitor makes it just clear as day. Well, this memory is full of zeros, so how many more do you need?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But with this toolkit, you can run it and say, well, you know, this video card for this model number of machine will do this many frames per second using these test cases, and this one will only do this. So it becomes a, you know, cost-benefit analysis. Is it worth it? What's acceptable to the end user without breaking the bank?
Yeah, and without creating huge complications for yourself and maintenance, too. But I True. Guess, you know, if you back this all the way up, the complaint from the user is not that articulate. The complaint from the user is, my machine is too slow, or the internet is too slow.
True.
And so actually trying to answer that question, it sounds like this is the tool. All right, go run this thing and send me back the package, and we'll figure out why you're running slow.
Yeah.
So how, I mean, obviously, driver conflicts. Are we actually out of memory? Could we use a better video card? Are there other things we can sort of extract from this?
Is the benefit of an SSD worth the cost in terms of like the boot speed?
Right. Disk bound.
Yeah. You know, it. And then where does the hybrid drive fall into that? I'm actually a big fan of hybrid drives for the reliability and then the speed that you still get. Mm. And, of course, the amount of space you get.
For the cost.
You know, yeah, for the cost. I've got a hybrid drive that's 750 gig and has I think it's like a 16 gig SLC cache on it, you know, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And or maybe it's 8, I don't remember. But, you know, the boot speeds are still good, but I still have a lot of space. And if my drive fails, the data's there on those platters and I can still kind of do something to get to them.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I've become a big fan of this idea of putting smaller drives into the machine to encourage using central storage. It always scares me when we put half a gig of storage into a workstation and the guy just stores stuff locally and then gets surprised when something goes wrong and he's lost his work.
Yeah. That's, you know what? That's a good point. I haven't thought of it that way, but you look at it, if you limit the space, but then you're talking about, you know, if it's a traveling user,
yeah.
Do you really want their iTunes directory or, you know, all their movies or whatever on a central store being backed up or, you know, is it part of their profile or not?
And, yeah.
You know,
you get into what's reasonable with that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
But, but you bring up an interesting point with laptops because I've certainly found, even with laptops I've got, that many of them don't suspend or hibernate well, like come out of hibernation different. And so, you know, at some point you're like, this machine hasn't actually been restarted for a while and you've got to get a restart. Is there ways to evaluate like what's going on with the machine that it gets cranky like that?
Trying to think of an assessment that would help with that. It's hard to say. You'd almost have to collect one manually in XPerf, which WPR UI is really easy to use these days. One of the things that's interesting, I think, that we talk about in Windows 8 is the fact that when we do a normal restart of Windows 8, we're hibernating the kernel, right? Which is why it boots up so quick.
Oh, right. Yeah. I know you thought you started cold, but you didn't really.
Right. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, it certainly improves boot time. So we're only doing that one reboot once a month that really counts because maybe we're patching kernel.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, the real hard reboot that takes a little longer. So it's a clever way to get speed going up. The one thing I found on a number of laptops when it comes to suspend and hibernate is that their NICs don't start up well. That often you have to shut down the NIC and bring it back up again because you suspended, connected to the network at Starbucks. You start back up in the office and the NIC takes a while to sort of figure out, oh, I'm in a different world. I'm cranky.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I see that a lot with wireless drivers, in particular. The hard, you know, Ethernet ones don't seem to be as bad.
Yeah.
But it's something about, you know, I was connected to this network and now I'm being asked to connect to this and do I retain my IP? It seems like it really confuses the drivers.
Yeah, some drivers seem to recover eventually and some just don't. And sometimes, you know, I think for the average user, they just reboot the machine and things get back to normal. Or they, you know, if you know enough to disable the driver and restart it so that it actually, you know, unloads itself, you get a better chance to get recovered.
Well, that's why I like the troubleshooter that we built, you know, started at Windows 7, the troubleshooters we integrated into the OS. You know, the network one actually, you know, will reset the adapter, do a IP config release renew, flush the DNS cache, you know, all that stuff. The stuff we would normally have to go in as an engineer and go to the command prompt or tell the user to do this. It's all built into that troubleshooter. I think those aren't used as much as they probably should be, you know, by enterprises or businesses.
Yeah. I think if people don't know what they do. Like, you just, I think it's just to stop from confusing the mortals. Just says, hey, I'll take care of this for you. I'm trying a few things. For technical people, it's like, here's what I'm going to actually do. Bap, 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 bap. You know, like, this is my script. It's like, good. All right. Do that. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't show that way. There's always a conflict between, you know, people who aren't technical and just want the thing to work and people who are technical and want to understand what's going on.
Right. Because, I mean, part of it's knowledge for knowledge's sake, but part of it's also how do I mitigate it in the future so it doesn't happen again, right?
Yeah. And some confidence that good things are actually happening, that you're trying something sensible.
Yep.
But it does seem to me that a lot of this has to do with good quality drivers. My frustration, of course, is that you have a certified driver. This is not a good driver.
Yes.
And it's just not a lot of recourse there. I guess it gets back to why we try and get into stuff like certified hardware. You know, I was never a big fan of Dell Latitudes, but from an IT perspective, they worked. You know, they didn't move as fast in terms of innovating in hardware, but their drivers were solid. They just had fewer maintenance problems. People always wanted the fancy new ones, but if you actually needed to support a lot of laptops, you bought these simpler, older, reliable ones.
Yeah, there's something to be said for, you know, using proven technology and not really being on the bleeding edge, for sure. Yeah,
it's really a balancing act. I think we sort of run down what goes on in the toolkit. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the assessment server. I guess this is a different level.
Yep. Yeah, we in PFE, we use it sometimes to assess things like, a bake-off on multiple images on different types of hardware or, sizing for a VDI density per, you know, virtual host is another way to use it. It's pretty cranky in a domain joined environment. They don't technically, you know, the documentation says don't run it in domain joined. Yeah. It has something to do with WinRM, but
that also speaks to me about this is not something you use on your production machines. This is in the lab.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
The only thing that's the bummer with that is that you don't get the cost of the group policy processing for the user, which
right.
I thought would have been pretty interesting. But,
yeah. And kind of important, too, because we can definitely get out of control with group policy.
We can definitely get out of control. And then also, depending on the WMI queries that are being done, I mean, we can really hose a machine. It doesn't matter how fast it is.
Sure.
You know? You know about the hotfix we just released, right?
No, which one?
It's 277-5511.
You memorize these numbers?
Well, I had a small part to play in this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of near and dear to my heart. It is the enterprise reliability hotfix. And if you note the language in the first paragraph, we're not saying only apply this if you have the symptoms in the article. It actually states in there that you should make this part of your build.
Wow. So, and this is a hotfix onto to Windows 7?
Windows 7 and R2.
R2 as part of the SP1.
Yeah.
Hey, I found your blog post for it. There it is. I'll make sure to include a link on the show for this. So hey, nice. You come up nice and high on the list here for this. So tell us a story about this hotfix.
Well, I do Windows desktop wraps. And a couple of years ago, there were some PFEs kind of sitting around talking, you know, at a conference and, you know, writing things on napkins and stuff like that. How do we make the world a better place? Mm-hmm. How do we help enterprise customers? Because a lot of us felt like you go and do a WD wrap and it's apply these hot fixes. And then after we do that, then we see what's actually wrong, if anything. And so I said, well, why don't we just make this a part, a roll up or SP2 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, so we started having meetings and talking to Windows Sustained Engineering, and we got the CTS PM, Aaron Connor, and a couple of his really good guys in the DSQ, kind of looped in, and we started talking about it and went to some red zone meetings where we have feedback into WinSE and, said, hey, we really need to, think about this. And unfortunately, I end up playing the bull in the china shop role sometimes, where I would just go into the meeting and say, hey, why are we have this? I don't understand, and then other people would, eventually not invite me to meetings. But it happened, and I'm so excited. It's awesome,
So you, so a group of you, and I see you mentioned Yang Ri specifically, who's been on the show before, had basically found some issues around some boot performance problems that started out as ended up being a hotfix, and now it's a part of a roll-up, and I guess it'll eventually be part of a service pack.
If there is one, yeah.
I gotta think there'll be a service pack, too, for Windows 7. Gotta think we'll see. There will be. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? But, okay, so, and of course, it's, the nature of a roll-up is this is just not going to show up in Windows Update. You have to go get it.
You do have to go get it from the catalog, but it is in the catalog, and WinSE did test it.
Right.
So it doesn't have that normal LDR branch of comment attached to it that, only apply this if you have the issue, it may cause regressions, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
This was a tested roll-up, yeah.
So it's pretty well known. And that's sort of outside of the spectrum of roll-up. I think most people think, oh, I'll just wait for the service pack.
Yes. And we felt pretty strongly from the field perspective that, if I go on site to a customer and I say, we'll apply this hotfix and it shaves 2.5 minutes off their boot time, then they wonder, well, why wasn't this in Windows Updates? Why is it in a hotfix format that I can't put into WSUS easily or roll out with SCCM easily? And then why am I paying for someone to come on site and give me a hotfix?
So,
which
yeah,
are all really good questions.
All a very reasonable thing to say. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. If we get people to apply this, we fix a bunch of WMI parsing things and TCP/IP stack fixes, and it just makes the systems a more reliable body, for the business. And I really can't emphasize enough how much of a big deal it is that people look into this.
Wow, that's really interesting. So, I mean, you guys didn't necessarily build this. You found the issue and documented it, and it was the Windows team that actually did the fix?
The WinSE team, Sustained Engineering, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a collection of, I don't even remember how many hot fixes, but it was a large number. And then it got to the point where, 20 of these hot fixes all fixed this binary.
Right.
So just take the latest one. And then, blah, 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 blah. You roll it all up, and it's, I think we documented it's like around 90 binaries are patched in it, it's a sizable fix. Some people are a little nervous about it. I've been talking to people on forums and things like that. And, it's like, well, will it work fine with TMG? Will it work fine with my configuration for Exchange? It's like, you have to test it. But the easy win is, in my eyes, put it on your clients, your endpoints that all should be running the same build anyway.
Right.
you know, and put them on there and let them not have that waiting, you know, for computer, what is it, applying user settings or any of that stuff, applying computer settings. You know, get out of that, save them a couple minutes of productivity every day,
sure,
which adds up over a year or two. And plus, it's really invaluable from a logo perspective for us, you know.
Yeah. It did. Well, in the end, this isn't necessarily stuff that's broken. It's just wasting time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is about saving a bunch of time that was being wasted.
Yeah.
And I've certainly had, especially 2008 R2, I've definitely had VMs that just sat at applying user settings for ages.
Yep.
Especially if they've got communication challenges with Active Directory. I found they're very sensitive to that.
Yeah, we've had people that, you know, have called into the queues that, as I understand it, that have had, you know, terminal servers, you know, running Citrix and everything that, you know, it took 20, 30 minutes to get the users to log on. And it's like, you know, clearly that's broken. That's not just wasting time.
Yeah.
And this rollup would address, you know, a lot of those issues. I mean, and then if you apply this rollup and then you still have those delays, that's where it's worth calling us and, you know, saying, hey, you know, can you look at this ETW trace? Something's not right here. Yeah. You know, it's not at that point. It's probably not going to be us necessarily. It's going to be something in the environment, and everyone uses our product differently. So, you know, it's just impossible to predict all those iterations of, well, what if you do this, 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 and this? It's like, you know, we can't see that far into the future.
Sure. Now, I was dealing with a customer that had all of the Active Directory controls at the far end of a WAN connection, and everybody logged on at the same time the same day, and logins took a long time.
Yeah.
And when, you know, and pretty quickly, there was a couple of guys who figured out, if I come in a half hour early, my login's nice and quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a wrap once for a customer that was global, and they were logging in from, you know, North Carolina, and they were hitting a domain controller in Shanghai.
Right.
Over a partial T1, you know, that was the connectivity, and it had about 20% packet loss, and that's where they were getting their group policy objects.
Yeah, and 300 like, milliseconds okay. round trip time, and yeah, oh, yeah.
If so it that makes might, it, right?
Yeah. And that might take a little while, just the retries alone. And if you've got a substantial group policy set, like that's a lot of trips.
Yeah.
And when you're testing that in the lab with a gigabit Ethernet connection that's 8 feet long to the server, you don't even notice it.
Right. Yeah. There was actually a it was a product that abstracted the user profile, so you know you could have a portable user profile, and an early version of it was tied to a particular SQL server. So all the guys that were in Chicago thought it ran great.
Right.
But the guys in Australia were like, "This thing takes 10 minutes to log in," and you know, of course, the guys in Chicago were like, "Ah, oh, you don't know what you're talking about." Blah blah blah. And so finally, we come on site and look at it. It's like, yeah, it turns out the further you are in milliseconds from the server, the longer it takes to log in.
Yeah, latency is the magic quiet killer that everybody in the lab can't test.
Right.
I've never found a good latency simulator. And I'm a web performance guy. We live and die on latency. But no way to really test that in the lab. You had to do remote connections and actually say, okay, we're 250 milliseconds away. Now run it. What does it look like?
Yeah. Yeah, the fun thing with the WDRAP is trying to convince the customer that, yeah, we need to get traces from each one of your sites if possible.
Right. Sorry, we better define the WDRAP acronym.
Oh, yeah. The Windows Desktop Risk Assessment Program. Right.
And when I first met PFE, this was the thing. Unfortunately, not everybody can get one. This is premier customers only.
That is true.
Yeah, and I know it's frustrating for some folks. We've got to find a way to put WDRAP in a box. Everybody needs to know this.
Yeah. I mean, our blogs do a good bit, I think, but, you know, there's only so much you can tell people, you know. Yeah.
Sometimes you just want it to happen. Like, give me a button to press and good things happen to me.
Well, you know, we are doing, and this is still Premier customer only, but our penetration rate with Premier customers with WDRAP is, I think, in the single digits. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about that. I don't know. Oh, well.
So the reality is not enough people, even people that are premier customers, are not doing enough of these.
Yeah. So we actually came up with this program called WDRAS. It's RAP as a Service. Have you heard of that?
No.
I'll give you a link to it. We even have a little video for it where it explains, you know, it walks you through the idea of the RAS. But basically, RAS is what you're asking for. It's a button where you can go and assess your environment remotely. And then we can interpret the results with you and explain what needs to be done. And then we can actually create remediation plans where people can come on site and share knowledge if needed, or help remediate certain parts, or really get in deep if needed. Yeah.
It sounds to me like just getting an assessment of whether or not you need an assessment.
Yeah, almost.
There easy things we can check that show, okay, there's some issues here. Maybe we should dig deeper.
Right, right. And, you know, you look at it from like the ADRAP perspective, Active Directory Risk mm-hmm. Assessment. I mean, every customer that can have one, every premier customer in my eyes should have one.
Yeah.
You know, you just, you know, for Active Directory, we go in and look at machine or environments where, you know, the ADRAP reveals that only one DC out of five is working.
Right. And you know, therein lies the problem is people don't necessarily know that their infrastructure is fragile, that they things aren't working. Just that basic question, is my Active Directory infrastructure healthy?
Right.
You know, can you answer that question? Well, nobody's complaining is not a good answer.
No, no. And yeah, I had a Kritzit once where AD, or actually wasn't mine, it was one of our war stories, but AD had basically had to been rebuilt from scratch, and you're looking at like a 1,500 user company that, you know, they need a new mail server, they need a new file server, they need to redo all their permissions, new groups. I mean, you know, think about what happens when you lose Active Directory without a good backup. I mean,
years
of knowledge are just gone.
Well, and the funny part is, and then you go and actually look at the logs and find out it's been warning you for months that it's having problems, that it's not been able to synchronize across these servers, that these things are out of place, that these objects are illegal. Like, there's events sitting there for you to look at.
Yeah.
And if you wait till it's too late. I've had a couple of places where we got down to one valid AD. And that's pretty scary. And now you've got to go try, you know, just stand up a VM and get it synced just so you have another copy somewhere else and then start working through and getting everything else working.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it gives me chills. These days I have this reflex of fire a core 2008 R2. I haven't done it with 2012 yet, with AD prep on it, and just become a party. Now you're on. It eats so few resources, you know, and it's just, there's another copy, something we could count on while we deal with the hardware.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, what's next for you, sir? What are you working on now?
I'm still doing a lot in VDI. I'm working out, you know, some things on how to articulate differences in VDI builds and benefit, how dense can we go, things like that. And
right.
then, what else am I doing? We just finished a Windows 8 class and recorded that. It was pretty cool. It's like a Windows 8 Essentials to basically ramp people up on how to troubleshoot and understand the differences and everything.
Cool. Yeah, we did it. It was back at show 289 that we talked to you about VDI and the wonders in there as well. But yeah, definitely, I feel like we're still getting our feet under us of real understanding how Win8 is going to behave in the enterprise. It takes time. For better or worse, you know, they held Win8 very close to their chest. We didn't really get a chance to start testing with it until it shipped. So now my customers certainly are looking at it and going, okay, well, let's go through the process and look what the builds look like and how the hardware behaves. And it just takes time. But it does seem to me that the ADK set, this sounds like a set of tools that can sort of get us on the right track to mm-hmm. how our machines are going to behave under Windows 8.
Yeah, yeah. Particularly when you look at the modern interface, you know, we actually have a test case for how do we do going in between apps and mm-hmm. searching and things like that. So you can actually see how quickly do we transition between desktop mode and modern mode, and how do we go from app to app, and do we have interface hangs because of the video driver or, nice. You know, lack of memory or low CPU or what have you.
So that's actually in the ADK are the tools to make those kinds of assessments for 8 on a given piece of hardware.
Oh, yeah. It's actually made for 8. So only some of the assessments will work on 7, but all of them will work on 8. And then we even have some RT ones.
Awesome. Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
You're always welcome, sir.
Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.